Yeah, I'm Zach Hudson, and I'm fucking amped to be on Talking Schmeat.
Holy cannoli.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Yeah. Oh, big dog's in.
Do we really want to be here?
No, everything's changed.
We on? Schmitty?
Talking Schmidt.
Talking Schmidt, dude.
You're going to come out different.
Shit my pants, blood.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Holy shit.
It's about the one.
Who is this guy? He thinks he's tough shit.
What's up?
Come on, Schmitty. What the fuck?
Tell the skateboard police to come get me.
What is happening?
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yeah!
We did a little ripoff from Conan O'Brien today, kids, and there's a big disclaimer. This may or may not be the best podcast you ever listened to today. We are talking zines, skateboarding, life lessons, and all that with the CEO of the world's famous How Dare You zine. This is Zach Hudson.
What's up, Schmitty?
How are you, dude? It's been what? At least 5 years, maybe more.
Yeah, I haven't been to the city for 5 years, so it has to have been at least 5 years.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm in Portland, Oregon. I'm in a little SRO, little room. Like, it's probably a 100-year-old building or 80-year-old or something like that. But, yeah, it's converted into, like, a sort of treatment center. It's not a rehab, but it's a treatment center for men and women, mostly men, though. And so I just stay here and under certain conditions, but I'm about to leave in a couple of weeks, going back to New York.
Oh, cool. How far are you from Burnside?
Oh, Burnside Street is right there. And then I'm at the end of the bridge on the west
side. Are
you
east side? So, oh, you're west side.
Yeah, so I just go right across the bridge. Yeah, it's probably a 8-minute skate.
Okay. Are you kind of by that Owl Conservatory?
No, I don't know about that.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm the Owl Conservatory. I'm in Old Town.
Okay.
So 3rd and Cooch, right by that sign that says Made in Portland.
Right by the pizza spot. What's it called?
It's called Pizza Slut or something now.
Joel Price used to work there.
I remember that. I went there when he worked there. I got a picture of him slinging dough through the slit.
Well, let's start with where it all began. Where were you born and raised?
Okay. Well, I was two different. I wasn't raised where I was born, right? I was born in Illinois in, I don't know, near East St. Louis, just outside East St. Louis, Missouri, but on the Illinois side.
Uh-huh.
Or no, there's St. Louis, Missouri, and there's East St. Louis, Illinois. Anyway, I was born in the Midwest and,
Born at, fucking Herman's Hole?
No, but I almost died there.
By there though, right?
Dude, I don't know my Midwest geography that well, to be honest. Just born there, and I left from there to Austin when I was like 1 or 2 years old. So like 78, I moved to Austin. My dad was a big time coke dealer, he was very successful. And he got busted with 350 pounds of weed.
This guy's got bud.
Back when it was, I mean, even if it was legal, that much weight. Like, anyway, so he got busted. He jumped the bench or whatever you call it, you know, didn't go to court. So then he was a fugitive. So he's wanted by the FBI. He was on the like most wanted list. So they were after him, but he sold more than just weed. He sold stuff. I mean, he kept busy. And anyway, so he had to keep moving. He had fake identities and all this stuff. So he relocated to the West Coast, to the Bay Area, like way back, I don't know, 70s, 80s. Uh-huh. So that's kind of where my connection to the Bay Area. He went away to prison until 88. So I lived with my mom in Texas till 88. Then I moved to the Bay Area in 88.
You were in Austin the whole time till 88?
Yeah, from like 78 to 88. And I went back for high school a little, like for 2 years. But then I came back to the city in 94.
That's okay. So were you friends with like Zach Martin and Jake Nunn and them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I moved. So I moved to the East Bay, Pleasant Hill, and then Antioch. I don't know if you consider Antioch the East Bay, but whatever, Bay Area. And so I lived out there until like 91 or two, like after the Blind video came out. I moved back to Austin for 2 years. And then I turned 17, and then I moved back to the city proper, San Francisco proper.
Okay.
So yeah, I knew Zach Martin, Peyton Denman, Brian McGuire, Mosley, Ryan Burkhalter. He's rip. And Zach and Jake. Yeah.
Jamie Telch. Telch. Was Elias out there then?
No, he didn't move out there till like later my on. SF days. Like, yeah. But well, I know him. You know, I know him from SF, and I know him. I've been to his shop a bunch of times. He's cool.
What was some of the shit that, like, you were, like, what was your early influences out there? Were you into, like, Crumb and Gibson and all the Texas guys, or?
No, I was, like, well, at what point? Like, so, like, in early
like, skating, when like, you're getting the fire, like, you get your first, like, early on, you're getting your boards and you're starting to figure out what skating is. Maybe your first mag, you start putting pictures up on your walls of, like, some of your favorites.
It was, like, the 8th Street dudes, Hensley and Ron Allen and Chris Miller. Not, he wasn't 8th Street, but Doug Smith.
Shout out.
Doug yeah. Sains, John Diago. Mike Schwartz was my favorite skater when I was a kid. He was a Manisha Loc. I'm sure you know that, but I'm just saying it for the listeners. And
that seems random. How did that happen?
Well, I lit because I didn't start until 88. I didn't really start boarding until 88. And so my beginning of skating was in the Bay Area.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So like in like,
so did you see him like in person at Benicia or something?
Oh yeah. All the time. Like I saw like the infamous nose grind on the, I think it's 8 or 10 stair rail. Mike Schwartz, he's Indiad. You know, yeah. He's doing that stand up nose grind. That was a photo. But besides that, I just knew him from seeing him skate, him and his brother.
Right. Okay. Sick. So you weren't really skating much in Austin yet.
No, I didn't start skating in Austin until I went back in like 92. So like 88 to 92 is only what, 4 years, but it was a huge difference when you're that age, like 14 to 17 or 14 to 18 or 13 to 17, whatever it was.
Well, yeah. It's also a period where skateboarding changed a lot. Like from 88 to 92, I mean, that's a fucking... That's the birth of street skating, like wall rides, like maybe some early handrails. Like, it's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. And 91 was the blind video. And then 92, I think, was the 101 video. I mean, that wasn't as profound as the blind video, but I was just thinking about like Costin's part. He does like a kickflip tail slide, front side. And, you know, he does Adam McNatt nose grind nollie flip, you know, and like the blind video, as progressive as it was, you go 2 years further and nose grind nollie flip. That wouldn't have been, you didn't see that in the blind video. You know
yeah.
I mean? So yeah, you're right. The progression was really
deep. Was that your shit then? Was the like Hocus Pocus and
Yeah.
Shackle Me Not and
fuck, Sick Boys. Sick Boys was like one of my first and favorite videos.
Okay.
It's a lot different than the HG videos, of course, but like same era.
Who were some of the early guys that you met when you moved to the Bay Area?
Nobody. I mean, I was 11, so there was Mark Hart, which I think he lives in Philly now, but, and there was a couple guys. I lived in an apartment complex in Pleasant Hill, and like two doors down was a skater. He was like 18, but I thought he was like a full grown man, you know, I mean, he might've been 16. I don't know, but they had this team and, called Always in Motion AIM, and it was Doug Sains, John Diago, Mark Hart, I think maybe Ben Job. I think he was an East Bay guy. I think like I always was unsure of that, but him in particular. But yeah, those are the guys. And then Benicia was, you know, a 30-minute drive. My dad would take me to Benicia. He'd sit at the grocery store that used to be across the street and just read all day. Or he would just drop me off. I mean, I was little, you know, I was like 11, 12. Once I started getting a little older, I would take the bus or ride with friends.
Mm.
Yeah. But Benicia was the spot. And Embarcadero, too. I'd sneak off to the city when I was – the first time I went to Embarcadero was 88, 89.
88. Okay. Fuck yeah. You were too young to skate that pool that was in Pleasant Hill. There was a really
good – I skated it.
Uh-huh. That was one of the best pools I've ever skated, I think.
It was wide open. Yeah. Yeah.
So good. Yeah. I skated with Shaggy and Phil and a bunch of dudes in like, I want to say sometime in the 90s for sure. Maybe 90. Okay. four spots.
Oh, early. Wow. It's still going. Because I remember.
Maybe early, maybe 92. I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah, I remember I would just take off from home on my board and just skate for, who knows, 10 miles a day, like journey, and just to ditches. And we heard about this pool, so we heard it was a bust, but I didn't know how to skate pools. I can't imagine what I was doing. But I would just go stand in the shallow, or, you know, like how you skate a pool, but I just did whatever the older guys were doing and just kind of pushed towards the light that was in the deep end. I can't remember what I did, but I wasn't like skating it like how it proper, but I'm pretty sure it was Wade was there. He was doing like stand up grinds. And I was like, you know, I'd never seen such shit in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was some other shit you would skate over there? Did you skate like Caldecott Tunnel, or like what are some of the, there was Caldecott Tunnel had this long ass ditch. I don't know if you ever skated it, but.
Oh, I never even heard of that.
Yeah,
I know they call the Caldecott Tunnel, but
it's like right on the other side. Like, I guess it's Orinda now. It's like they tore it all out and put nice places. But when I was younger, it was like kind of desolate, and it was like a farm almost, and it was like a drainage. It was sick. It went. It was like our Wallows kind of thing. It was like,
yeah. No, that's interesting. I never heard of that.
And then there was like the YMCA or something. There was a wooden park that was either Pleasant Hill or the next city over. I forget what it's called, but Wade would always go there and have footage.
Dublin or something. Maybe. I don't know. I think the bullpen. I don't know. You're schooling me on spots, man. You're not making me look good at it.
No, this no, might have been
these spots. I don't know.
This might have been a little earlier, but what are some gems that you remember that maybe aren't around, or maybe they are still are around?
Gems, dude. Like, okay,
like, was there any mini ramp or vert ramp or anything around, or anything like
I mean, not until I got older and started, like, there was Concord Underground. I don't know, like Corey Duffel would probably, it would probably ring a bell to 8 people in the Bay Area, like the Concord Underground. It was just like curbs, manual pads, you go there. I would skate I went to high school and junior high and high school in Antioch. So okay. I would just skate my school. I mean, yeah, it had stairs, handrail, banks.
Well, they had, what was the name of that? The dock or something, right?
The dock was right down the street from there. That didn't open up till 95, at least around 95. And I skated there, but I had already lived in the city by then.
Okay.
But yeah, I would go down there with Ferris, and yeah. You know the story of Jake and Coco and everybody getting shot up out there.
Yeah, were you there?
No, I wasn't in the van.
I was there, but not in the van. Like, I was in a different car.
Oh no, shit.
Yeah, that was the night that Phil got a nose grind low to high. I think Dan Wolf shot it. I forget what it was. Might have been in Slap, but those guys left either right before us or after us, and the next day I heard about it. I was like, fuck.
Oh man.
Yeah
holy shit.
How'd you meet Ferris?
In the city skating. I remember seeing him and Scott Bourne skating Union Square way back, you know, when it was, so like 95 or no, you know, wow. I met Ferris. I took over his job as a shipper at Deluxe. He was a shipper there when they were back on Egbert. So I met him briefly, like he showed me the ropes on how to be a shipping clerk, Deluxe, and then he was gone. And then I was like, okay, that dude with the glasses, I'll see him around. So I would see him around. And then 107 Webster was a skate house. Johnny Roughneck, you know, does his whole thing.
Yeah.
And he had a skate house. So like Ferris and Scott Bourne lived in a little dungeon in the back of the house that they cleaned out. It was a boiler room. And I was like basically a homeless kid most of the time I was in San Francisco. I would just like couch surf or like sleep on rooftops or whatever. So I would stay with Ferris and that force of nature, Scott Bourne. So yeah. Yeah. And then Ben Cron was there. Ultimate Phil, Ben Cron, Upson.
Shout out.
Yeah. A lot of people.
Oh, Upson was there too.
I remember seeing Upson at 107 Webster. That's probably, I met him earlier. I used to crash on Arco's floor. He lived in the TL, 225 Hyde Street, Hyde Turk.
Yeah. So. How rad, dude. What was that? What was that like getting the job at Deluxe? Like, did you meet somebody that told you to come down? Did you just like wing it and go in? What was the interview like? Who interviewed? Was there an interview? Okay. Like, how'd that whole process go?
I was skating the Mission with, there was a few people, but I want to say Matt McGrath and Tommy Guerrero. We were all skating. Maybe Phil might have even been there. I don't know. But yeah, we were skating Tommy Guerrero, and we stopped for Euros, or they stopped for Euros, or like burritos or some shit. And I just kind of sat there. I had no fucking money. I was living in the Tenderloin with my friend Chris Robinson, and I had no money. And Tommy's like, dude, you need a job, dude. And I was like, yeah, I do. What's up? He's like, come by the warehouse. So I'm by the warehouse. And
that's hilarious. What year was that?
As far as the job interview goes, it might have been Clint, Jeff Clint, or Kirk. Maybe. Huh. Yeah, that interviewed me. And then and Ruben was there, Ruben Orkin.
Oh, sick.
And yeah. So yeah, I just started boxing boards. There was a Russian kid and he didn't skate, but yeah, that was Deluxe. And it was, I thought it was the coolest job ever. Like, I had always gotten jobs and not really dug them. But this one was like in skateboarding, and like Gons would walk through, or Mike Frazier helped me put boards together, you know, and like,
yeah,
you know, Jason Lee and Pierre Benetamako, and like just skaters, freaks, whatever, you know. And I was just like, yeah, it was awesome. And then they, you know, they paid shit, but you know, they'd hook me up with boards and stuff here and there.
How long did you work there for?
I don't know, a matter of months. I'd say maybe 5-6 months.
She was tight.
Not then that long.
Did you quit or you get fired?
I just went. I was always loose. Like, I can never stay one place too long. I don't know where I went from there. I might have gone to Alaska, or maybe I went to I went back to Austin for a while to save money to go to Alaska. So I went to Seattle, got hired on by a company, and went out and worked in Alaska.
On the boats?
Yeah. It was a processing ship. It wasn't technically a fishing boat. It was 680-foot, huge processing ship. 680 feet is like, I think is the biggest mothership on the Pacific or something like that. And we were docked, anchored off the coast of Russia. So it was off by the Aleutian Islands. So you had to take a plane to Anchorage and then a seaplane to a skiff. Yeah, it was, dude, it was outrageous.
How do you deal with that, those big waters and stuff? Are you chilling, or you get seasick? Well,
the boat's so big that there were some pretty big storms, but It didn't rock the boat too bad.
It's not like Deadliest Catch where dudes are just puking and fucking going crazy.
I'm sure on the smaller boats, you know, like we would have boats that we commissioned or that we communicated with from other countries, and they would sell us their fish. So we would get this big vacuum, hook it up to their boat, suck it in, process the fish, move it around. We worked in these refrigerators, freezers. So when you say a freezer, you think like a walk-in at a restaurant or something, but these things were like 4 stories high, size, the length of a city block, and there was like 3 of them or something like that.
Oh, damn.
But you would just be like moving boxes of surimi or whatever it was. Surimi's like imitation crab or something like that. And it was just like these 40-pound boxes. You just huck them onto a conveyor belt. 40 pounds isn't that much, but it was 12 hours a day, every day. So 85 hours a week. Yeah, you got carpal tunnel. Luckily, though, I was like 20 years old, so...
Yeah. Did you skate it all up there?
No, I took a bus. No, I didn't skate when I got to Alaska. There was no, we weren't on land.
There wasn't, what was his name? Adrian Williams, I think, lived up there. And Ellington. There's a couple Alaskan dudes.
Yeah. No, I didn't even, like, I touched ground at the, like.
You were just in the water the whole time.
Yeah, I was in the water the whole time. I when I was in Seattle to get hired, I had to stay at, like, a hostel for a couple of days. So I had a board, and right before I got on my plane, I just sold it to some kid for $40 and got some soup or whatever the hell I was doing.
What age were you when you got your first camera?
My first camera that I didn't really put to use, but my first camera came from a friend of my dad's who killed his wife on acid. He went away. He came back.
It wasn't Sammy Town from Fang, was it?
No, it wasn't that cool. I mean, that's another story, but he gave me a Pentax K1000. Mm. I think that's what it was called. And I liked photography. I liked the images I always have. And but the rings on the lens, the shutter and the aperture, it was too much for me. So I just would shoot photos, you know, just point and shoot basically, and no settings. I didn't figure out shutter and aperture way later, until 2003 or four, when I started going to City College. I just took an intro class. Yeah, they explained to me like what shutter and aperture is, and how it just, how much light leaks in and how quickly. I just took it from there. I got a FM2 Nikon. Joe Hamicky,
shout out,
told me what to get. Rip. I took a class at City College on how to develop, shoot and develop black and white. So this is pre-digital, right? I mean, it kind of existed, but not the quality that it does today in 2004. Uh-huh. So yeah, I just took it from there. And I got lucky, like, shooting photos, you know, because I was in the city, so I was surrounded by rad skaters.
Yeah.
And the first photo I got was that was published was Pablo Carranza at 16th and Mission Bart Banks.
Uh-huh.
They had a roughneck tour. It's like a little skate demo type thing, a three up, three down, and then pretty much down the street, 16th and Mission Bart walls. So they had like a little high wall ride contest. I got up on the fence and got this odd angle, and it worked out. And then Julian hit me up. He's like, oh, yeah, let me see that. They use it for an anti-hero ad. I was fucking stoked, you know, because shot an anti-hero ad, like, straight out the gate. I was pretty hyped.
I always liked the story, Pablo's first trip in the van. They're driving down the street, and he's like, points over at these fucking pipes coming out, shooting smoke. And he's like, are those cloud makers?
I've heard that. Yeah, it was like a foundry something like that. I wasn't there, but I've heard that story.
Yeah.
Is that where they make clouds? Yeah, Pablo.
I love Pablo.
And Pablo.
Shout out.
So was that kind of how you met Julian and them, was working at Deluxe, or did you know them before that?
I knew them before that. I met when I first moved to the city of San Francisco. It was like 94. And I started staying at the Hate Street house, the Hate Street Hookers house. That's where they have the Puke Fest and the Fucktards video.
Yeah.
And so I started staying there, and I knew one girl. So I got in, and then she knew all the other, and like everybody knew each other, of course. And so I was like, I remember Mike Bavarnik, Gravedigger, Argo, Ruben, Wheat, Coco, Freddie Gall was upstairs.
Do we really want to be here?
The glue head lived upstairs. Made and distributed goods for everyone, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Little yellow powder. And that was 94. And so, like, Julian was there, and Arco. And yeah, I just kind of, they're a little standoffish. So for like, I mean, 5-10 years, I knew Julian, but wasn't really friends with him. I mean, it took a while to become friends with that dude.
Uh-huh.
But Arco, I would stay on his floor and like, Hurley, Jason Hurley, you know, Anticipation, right?
Yeah.
That too. And so we stayed at Arco's floor on Hyde Street.
What's up?
Off and on.
I just got the it was a while ago now, but I just finished making this China Banks documentary, and Tobin gave me the original tape of Julian and Cardiel skating. And Hurley's filming, actually, and then later Sean Young comes in, and you can hear him go like, come on, get it. Like, it's so sick hearing their voices. Like,
oh, I saw that, man. Props. That was really good. Everyone people come to me, did you see that? It was sick. Yeah, the China Banks documentary was fucking excellent.
Hell yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it took a long time. With the pandemic and everything, shit was just on hold. Everything crazy. Like, Jake died, fucking... Kirsten died, Monk died, the pandemic, and it was like, finish this video. And Jake and I had this idea, and Jake's like, dude, he called Arco, and he's like, work with Schmitty. And then one day me and Arco got together, went to China Banks and started filming like his recollections.
Yeah.
And we got so much like information for me that it was like, fuck, this is rad. And then once Julian was like down to be involved, I was like, this is because I knew Cardiel would do it, but I wasn't sure if it's not always Julian's thing to talk on camera and that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
And he did a really proper interview. And I was like, this is gold. This is going to be great. You know? And then Tobin dug up the original tape. And I was just like, just going through shit like a kid in a candy store. Like, oh my God. Like, yeah. So I was privileged. It was cool. I mean, it was all their history. I just put it together.
It was excellent. And when I see stuff like that, because you don't like, there wasn't a lot of hype up to it. It was just like, it's out. I mean, I didn't give it much thought how long it takes, but I was like, wow. Like, now that you say that, wow.
That's what Burnett always says. He's like, nobody's waiting for this except for you. Like, no one knows, you know, until it comes out. Like, so don't worry. And you're just like, yeah, but I can't. Yeah, just like you were saying, you can't stay at a job for long. I can't stay on a project for too long. I got the Peystone mentality where I just like to like keep it going. You know, it's like Jake going to skate spots too. Like, you'd be there 15 minutes. He's like, let's go to the next one. You're like, dude, we just stretched. Like, I just got warmed up.
Just stretched. Yeah. You and Salva.
Trujillo got three tricks. We're out. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
You're like,
Jake's taken me to a couple pools and like, yeah, that was his style. You know, he's like, well, you got time to fucking stretch. The cops will fucking be here by the time you finish stretching. It's time to hit and quit.
Yeah. What was that living on the hate street? Was Jake coming through there a bunch? When did you meet Jake for like kind of getting to know him?
Okay. I remember my first encounter was at the steps there at Thrasher. Like, I don't remember the layout exactly of the warehouse of the
like Thrasher. When you walk in the door, the stairs that go up.
No, it was like, it was more to the side. Anyway, I was just sitting there minding my business, 18 years old, had an attitude, but so does Jake. So I had this Three Stooges shirt I just got at a thrift store, and it said something about computers on the back, and Jake was sitting talking to somebody four steps above me, and I'm just sitting there like smoking a cigarette or something. Like, I kind of know who he is, but I'm not talking to him and he's not talking to me. And he's like, hey, you know about computers, dipshit? I didn't say anything. Okay. So, I mean, that's not a great story, but that's the first time that we encountered each other. The next time I was at Arco's house, we're sitting around drinking Meister Bra or whatever. I'm 18 still, you know, maybe 19. And Arco's like on the phone. He's like, okay, later, dude, see ya. And he's like, Jake Phelps is coming over. I was like, so? I mean, I kind of knew the name, but like I learned to love Jake later. So I wasn't like, oh, sick. You know, I was just like, okay, what's that mean? And he's like, well, he's going to make you feel pretty uncomfortable, I think. You know, he's going to, I don't know what exact Ark's exact words were, but he's like, just, you know, he's going to test you or whatever he says.
Mm.
And so we're all just sitting around. Jake bangs on the door, comes in, and I had the audacity to just not even speak up to say anything, but then I just asked him for a cigarette. It's like, no jokes, no smokes. That was that. But we became friends afterwards and then kind of frenemies for a while. I don't know. It was a tumultuous relationship, you know, but he called me his friend once. We drank beers together. We've been on the road together. He called me up to go to the Carbondale run. So I jumped in the van with him then.
Oh, with the kids, right? With Sean and Jordan?
And Karma and Pierre and Mickey, yeah. And Jordy, yeah.
What was it? Ted, I talked to Ted. He said to ask you about some nickname called New School.
All right. Yeah, Teddy.
Shout out.
So I used to ride for New School. I was on the B team for – actually, it started out Public. You remember Public? Chet Vaguely. Thomas rode for him. It was like Don Fallahy, Alba deal.
Uh-huh.
And so there was Public with Chet Thomas, and then like I started riding for them. I would buy boards. I was on the B team. So, you know, it was up there. And then, New School was like their sister or brother company, whatever. So I started getting New School boards. And then that was in Antioch. And then I moved to Austin and I was wearing like, I was riding a New School board, had a New School shirt and a New School 8-ball hat. And I go, and Austin is a great city, or especially back then. I mean, the kids are like, SF Heckles. Austin Heckles pretty fucking good too. But it was just the 90s, you know? So I'm there looking like a dork and like, whether you can skate or not, that's not what, they're just looking at your gear. They're like, what's up, New School? And it stuck. And I was like, well, I guess that's my nickname. Or they would call me Corbs. It was Jason Corbett wrote from New School. Anyway, yeah, that's that story. Zach Martin actually gave me that nickname.
New Corbs. School?
I think he,
oh, Corbs.
Yeah, Corbs.
What's some good shit you seen? Have you gone skating with those dudes and seen some fucking big hops of Jake Nunn or some radical moves from Zach or any of them?
Just watching Zach skate, like mini ramps, spine ramps. I mean, he can skate anything, street vert, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, just doing like stuff so flow. Like, I don't know, fakie to backside, fakie 5-0 to rail smack and then just fly over the, I can't say like any one particular trick. And same with Jake. Like I remember up in the north end, he was of Austin. He was just all in some huge gap. He kept grinding his hands because he would he was eating shit at first. And it was like this gravel parking lot. So he just put socks on both hands. So he just was like, that was gnarly. He's just like pushing full speed at some gap with like colored socks on each of his hands. It looked like he was doing a puppet show and getting gnarly at the same. Yeah. But, you know, dude, nothing really like in particular, just gnar.
Both awesome dudes. I spent a lot of time with those guys. I was filming for Thinks when they were on there. So it was like, I got to know them real well. Zach would stay with Phil and Zooch and stuff. And we went back to Austin a few times, I think, with those guys. Did you know that guy? I think he might have died, but Little Dave.
Oh, he did die.
Yeah, that dude was cool.
Yeah, I knew him. He was awesome. Yeah, mm-hmm. Whenever I would go through Austin, I mean, I knew him since he was like 12. Like he would, mm-hmm. Come over to my little, I lived with this dude, Ricky Soto, and he would be in a little room off campus, UT campus, and Little Dave would like get off 5th or 7th grade or whatever it was with his little backpack and just come knocking on our door and, can you guys skate? What are you doing? Or watching TV, drinking beer, go away. We were like it was like Arco's apartment in Austin and I was the older guy, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah.
But he was a very troubled young man and he met his demise.
Damn it.
As people do. Yeah. Rip.
Mm.
Sucks. Yeah, he was a sweet kid, man.
So yeah, he was always bringing like the fun, like just like humor, like definitely fun and funny and shit.
Yeah, he wasn't a very timid guy. He was awesome.
Oh yeah. True or false? You got your skateboard stolen at EMB?
Oh yeah, yeah. I did. I got jacked at EMB, and the guy didn't even have a gun or a knife that I know of. Yeah, it's embarrassing, man.
Was it from a skater or from a hood or what?
No, a hood. Oh. Hood kid, you know. You want the story?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Where did you leave your board over here or did he come and grab it from you or what?
It's so embarrassing, but I'll tell it.
Okay.
So I took it was 17, I just moved to the city and I was staying in a little SRO and I go to skate and I had just set up a new ATM board, right? New school ATM. Like I was getting boards from these guys and it was all white. It would just look like a pristine board, you know? And I go to EMB and it was just a darker vibe there. It wasn't like 91 or 92. It was like a little colder, you know? And, but I'm skating, just doing my thing. But I made a mistake and I just sat down in this hood. He looked like, Chris Rock from CB4. I remember that because he had like Jerry Curl, beanie, glasses, and maybe, I don't know if he had gold teeth too, but he was like a neighborhood fella. And he says, hey man, you want a cigarette? I remember they were Cools. And I was like, yeah, I smoke. I'm dumbass, like taking candy from strangers. And I mean, like I said, this is not the bright spot of my life here, but I was like, yeah, I took a cigarette. And then he's just like kind of milling around and everybody was there, like LeVar. I remember LeVar was there. There was at least a dozen others, locals, EMB locals, skaters. And he's like, hey, can I see your board? And I was like, I didn't like that. I was like, all right, go ahead. And he stood on the board. He tic-tacked around. He was pushing around. And I was like, oh, he's just enjoying himself. I was like, okay, cool. Don't be a dick, Zach, you know. But I'd heard about the jackets too, so I was a little weary, but he gave it back to me. I was like, okay, cool. So I started skating. He was like, hey, let me see your board again. And I handed it over and he just started walking away. you know, around the corner of the Hyatt, like up Market Street. And I was like, I just kind of looked at the ground. I was like, fuck, what? LeVar's like, you better go get your board, dude. I was like, you're right. So I just stood up, followed him like I was going to do something. And I just got in his face. I was like, give me my fucking board back, man. You know, and I kept trying to grab it. And he started getting in my face, just growling at me. And I just kind of, he intimidated me. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. Like, I think about it all the time. Like, I should have just started swinging. And like, what happens, happens. You know, but I didn't know his deal, what he had on him, or
right.
You know, when I was that young, 17, I didn't know how things. I had imagined how things were, so I imagined he's got a big brother around the corner, or maybe he does, or he's part of or some gang,
gun.
Some, or a gun, or a knife, or whatever. So yeah, I got jacked, but there's a little redemption to the story, so. I went back to my little SRO, set up a new board. Luckily, I had access. You know, I had another parts or whatever. So I set up a new board, and I was pissed at myself, right? So I went down to Market Arrow the next morning and I had the guns just to redeem myself. Yeah.
Nice.
Nobody could take that away from me. And so when I left, and this is just a tidbit interesting. The only person, there was no skaters there. I just was there by myself, just monoing gonzo, whatever. And the only other person there was Gabriel Rodriguez sitting in the corner and just kind of watching. And when I left, he's like, what's that? What's that? Another RIP. But yeah.
How sick are those early photos at Embarcadero where there's just like LeVar's chilling underneath? Like someone's doing the gap and LeVar's like just sitting. I just love seeing the dudes that are at the sessions underneath or in the background. It's like fucking amazing days. Do you see Mike Carroll down there a lot?
Yeah.
Henry
was intimidating. Carroll and Mike KO. He was scary too.
Oh,
Mike KO.
Yeah.
Like, God, he was so goddamn good though. Like you watch footage of it now and it's like pop shove. It's like 2 feet high. Like everybody else had no power. But the Dogtown video, right? The dog, I think it was called the Dogtown video. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just doing like, I don't know, he's back lips, front lips, pop shove, it's kick flips, 360 Ollie. Yeah. He made shit look good when everything was kind of puffy and not puffy, but less powerful. You know, everybody was just trying to get the trick rather than make it look good. He was ahead of his game.
Yeah, I was just talking to Karma about that video and it's crazy, like, to think that those guys mostly filmed their whole parts in like 2 or 3 sessions. Like,
yeah,
Rosenberg would come to town and him and Wade would go out and they'd film a whole day filming and then they'd just put it all together. And that was like 2 or 3 days. I was like, damn,
because
that video was really cool. I was hyped on it when it came out. I remember like Wade Ollie in those, I think it's on 580 or something, like on your way out to Stockton, or no, 88, I don't know, one of those highways, but it's on the left and no, it's the 24, I think, and there it's like a parking lot in a business thing. Later him and Corey Duffel ollied it together.
Oh, that's in Concord.
Yeah, like out to 24, right?
Yeah, it's been so long, but yeah,
but yeah, one of the, I don't know. Yeah, I know,
that's right. I used to kind of live out there. Pleasant Hills
and those cement ledges that like Wade won a nose ground and stuff.
And Wade front board slid, the other, it was a curb coming out of there. Yeah, but I know that section, that business center.
What do you think, is Wade one of the all times or what?
I would say so. I think, you know, I still get out and skate, but I think about skateboarding nonstop. I was just thinking about Wade skating the other day. Like, he skates like if there's like a way you're supposed to skate, like that's it. I mean, there's others too. He's not the only one, but especially on a spine, of course. Like,
yeah,
just, I don't know. And I see guys like Danny Way and I'm like, and Hasoi and et cetera. And I'm like, I skate, but do I really? I don't know what these dudes are doing or how they do it or what it feels like to do the shit that they're doing, man. Yeah. I'm like, dude, I can like tail slide a ledge or slappy a curb or kickflip up a manhole or whatever. Yeah. My rinky dink, you know, skateboard career. But yeah. But anyway, Wade is like, I mean, just thinking about it right now, it just kind of gets me pumped, you know.
He definitely fit the mold of skater of the year and never got it. He's one of those few guys, like, you know, like Muska and Jamie Thomas didn't get, but they weren't really Thrasher guys. You know, Wade was a NorCal dude, spent a lot of miles with Jake, rode for Think. Like, he's one of the greats. I mean, it's like, for me, it was like Cardiel and Wade, maybe Chris Sen, like in that era, like the all-terrain rippers. Like later, Trujillo fits that mold and a bunch of other dudes. But early on, those guys were just like, I mean, Phil, obviously, but
right.
When I was working for Think, it was just fucked that you had Phil, Drahobel, and Wade. It was like Jesse Paez. It was just like they could skate everything, dude. It was,
and that team was
gnarly,
incredible. Yeah.
Well, what are our thoughts on skateboarding in the, like, in this new era, like the whole woke movement and evolving and everything? Just, like,
you're just baiting me. You're trying to get me to say something so I can get canceled.
Well, how about this? What about just everybody rips?
No, that's not true.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
it seems like every fucking kid that skates is good. Like, and you don't even know who half of these dudes are.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know in that mean? Sense, that's true to a sense. But I see some – I got to watch what I say, I guess. But, yeah, see some stuff go down, and it's just like, just keep it to yourself. You know what I mean? It's like it just – I mean, let the hippie ride, as Jake would say. Like, I'm not trying to get in anybody's way. Go skate. Yeah. Freestyle, butt naked, whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
But I just get a little – it's not like I'm offended, but I'm like cringe when I see some of the stuff go down. But on a positive note, yeah. I just saw some clip from those 2-0 kid or however many it was, like some zero stuff. And I'm just like, and you know what really blows me away is like, I think it's, I'm not real good on it at everybody's name, but Elliot Sloan.
Vert skater?
Yeah, well, mega skater, right?
Yeah.
And then Clay Kreiner.
Like, but Elliot Sloan had that. Burnett just shot a really sick photo of him with, like, fire cracker or something.
I just saw it, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. That thing. And then, yeah, I think it's Clay Kreiner. Like, he skates mega ramp padless and just, I mean, again, that's like Danny Wade type stuff where it's just like, it gets me, I can't do it. I can't do that. Nah, can you? You know, it's like when you were a kid. It's like, can you kick flips? Like,
it's also unrelatable. Like, you don't have access to a vert ramp, and you definitely don't have access to a mega ramp. Like, Bob's backyard is in, like, it's one of a kind. Like, what the fuck? And I guess Elliot has a similar vibe, but like, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from those dudes. I'm just saying, like, as far as like, okay, this dude just kickflipped a huge gap. I can go to a huge gap. I can learn how to kickflip. I might never be able to kickflip that huge gap, but I can relate.
And you're,
that guy doing a rodeo flip over a 40 foot gap off of a fucking kicker that goes into a 20 foot high QP.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, all I can think about is Jake Brown and Pat Duffy. That's why, you know, I'm like, fuck.
Nobody did Johnny Cash like us. Not even Johnny Cash, man.
It's just strange because I was thinking about this. Like, one of my favorite video parts is Danny Way in the DC video. And it's just the first mega ramp type, whatever you call that.
The roll in was scary enough where it's just narrow in the rocks and he's going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the roll in and then there's no net.
Yeah.
That's not Danny Way style, right? and like that and Stevie Williams part are like both of my favorites. Like, I could more relate to Stevie Street stuff. Not that I'm there, but Danny Way stuff is way up there. But what I'm saying is, like, it's just, I just get stoked on Danny Way. And like, even though it's like a 50-foot heel flip lip slide or whatever he's doing. I can't do that, but
and,
I don't
and
know.
You maybe guys it's are the right. Music.
Yeah.
He's skating to Sabbath or something rad, and then he's got the right style and the attitude and everything that comes along with it. He won Skier of the Year twice.
He did. That's, you know, and rightfully so, yeah.
Yeah. two different eras, 92 and I don't remember when the other one was, like 90, I don't even know, but yeah. It might have been 2000.
Yeah.
But yeah, actually, a little caveat, I filmed a line of Stevie Williams that was in that DC video.
At Love or where?
No, where? At EMB. I mean, Pier 7.
Pier 7? Yeah. Okay. Sick. Yeah, no. That and the Chocolate Tour, those are two of my favorite video parts. Stevie Williams is one of my favorites. Yeah. He quit the girl chocolate thing, and everybody's like blowing it. And it turns out he knew what he was doing, or he made it happen. He's got that DGK thing, so good for him. He's on the sides of buildings and stuff. I mean, whatever you're into, but
he's legendary.
He's legendary.
I like watching the older dude still killing it.
Yeah, like, and he's an older dude now.
He's an older dude now. You can really, like, little Stevie is not little.
No, no.
In case you forget. When did the whole zine, like, thing come together? Did you think about it for a while, or was it kind of spontaneous and you like how did that happen?
Okay, so I always wanted to shoot for Thrasher, right? When I first got my camera, I wanted to shoot skate photos, and then like the ultimate, if you shoot skate photos, the ultimate is to get them in Thrasher, right? So I had a bunch of photos and they definitely weren't that fucking good. And then, so I would just look at them and it'd be like my friends, and I'd think of like a funny caption, because I would always be in that kind of magazine mindset when I would look at an image, like a caption, right? And then, so me and Mo started saying that we had a zine, but it was just a joke, kind of like Chris Cole had a fake band. Like, we had a fake zine. And eventually, October 2005, I just printed out a bunch of photos and put some paper together. Oh, and it looks like this. Well, it looks like this. This is the new one. So it's just like each piece of, it's not bound or nothing, right?
Oh, there's no, you don't staple it or close it?
This is the original. So I make copies off this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. And damn, then, that looks pretty thick.
That's 10 pages. So that's 40, or 10 pieces of paper, double-sided and split in half. So it's 40. If you count the covers, yeah, 40 pages. And then, so I would just use my photos and like photos from, like, I don't know. I was really obsessed with Dr. Phil and Oprah, just because I like don't like them, especially Dr. Phil. So, which is, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I don't even know what that means. But like, I would just put all this shit into the zine and just like write funny quotes and stuff. So, and then I would just take it to Kinko's and spend like $5 on a goddamn copy that I was going to give away. So I found out ways to make it cheaper, but I still don't know what the hell I'm doing.
How, where'd the name come from?
Okay. So remember there was this ditch under the 280 in the city, right by the golf course.
Oh, yeah. That's
it was, right, or maybe where it was a drive range.
Yeah. I live like a block from there.
Okay. So somebody, I think Julian and Cyrus were cruising by on the freeway or on the street or whatever, and they see just somebody in like 10-foot-tall letters just written, "How dare you?" And they just started saying it, and then we started saying it, and they were like, "Yeah, that's the name of the zine, How Dare You." Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of a funny thing that like a crotchety old lady would say, like, "Oh, how dare you?" So it's just kind of making fun of a lot of shit.
Yeah. So yeah. The whole approach is tongue in cheek, yeah?
Like, yeah, there, but there's
is,
some
is there stuff. A lot of sarcasm, or like what's the vibe, or is it just all over the, I mean, especially it's, now, has it kind of changed a little?
It's chilled out. Maybe in a good way, maybe in a bad way. I don't know, because I got this one, and it's a little more sincere, but it's like I don't take it too seriously. You know, I really don't. Like, I just put it together. And this one, like, since I don't have a camera at the moment. So I'm not shooting. I don't have my own photos. A
lot of writing?
A bit of writing, but it's a lot of submission based.
Oh, okay.
So I get other people and like a lot of interviews, which amounts to writing as well, like, you know. But yeah, it's not a bunch of my photos in there anymore.
Who you got featured in this one? You got the Big Brother guy, right? Earl Parker or something?
Earl Parker. It's got Timo Bagwell here.
Wait, Timo interview?
Yeah, a little Timo interview.
Shout out.
Recent?
Yeah. Yeah, can you believe it?
No. the man does not want to speak right now.
No.
I love Timo. I was like, how much do I pay you to do the podcast? And then after we're done, you come over and we'll edit it together.
Right. Yeah.
Timo's the best.
I've known him. He's one of my oldest friends. I met him in Houston when I was 17.
Uh-huh.
We jumped in a car back to Austin. He taught me how to steal from soda machines. They call it the ghetto ATM.
Fuck.
So you get a dollar and you tape packaging tape to the end. You put the dollar in and then you zip it out and it gives you a Coke and your change. We would do that and we would just travel all over the greater metropolitan area. We'd have a trunk full of Coca-Colas and like bags of change. Yeah.
That's
he taught me. He was a Caesar survivor. He's like a real street kid with integrity. Well, that's the zine. It's got a couple interviews.
You just putting it together right now? How could people get a hold of it?
Oh, you can go through my Instagram, How Dare You Zine. And then I have a Big Cartel. I don't even know what the Big Cartel is called. It's just a link in my Instagram. So go to How Dare You Zine.
And then hit the bio and then.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. How much does a zine go for?
They used to be nothing, but I'm trying to get $10 a pop.
Fuck yeah, dude. Keeping the fucking flame going.
Okay.
Yeah. Or if you're a shop, you know, a little less because you gotta make a buck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I sold a bunch and the copies are coming back. I got a bunch. This dude that does 151, the new version of 151, like now that it's not with Imperial. He's going to help me make copies. He's going to take half and I'm going to take half. And I don't know. I don't know. He might put them his board inserts or something. Okay. So it's just like a little connection.
Do you number them? Like no. not the individual ones, but like is this like issue number 406 or whatever?
I think it's 27. That's what I'm saying.
Bro, I need that. It
says 27, okay. But the last one might have been 27. I'm really unorganized. But yeah, this is the 27th one.
And this is 2022. And you started, the first one was 2005?
Yeah, so 17 years, 27 issues. But, you know, it's not like a real thing where you do it once a month. That would be a lot of work.
Is there one that you look back at as kind of your, like, the one you'd put on your shelf as your all-time?
Yeah, I guess the Antihero issue. It was number 18, you know, the 1-8 issue. Okay. So I put Andy on the cover. And that's 2011 when Andy was making his first comeback or second. I don't remember. But so I went and stayed with him. Like, he had gotten out of prison. And he was I think he might have gotten out of off parole or probation or whatever. So I would go to I was squatting in Martinez, California. So I would just take the Amtrak to Modesto and stay with him because I wanted to get a real interview. So we sat sometimes it's just an email, sometimes it's over the phone, but I wanted to do like some actual journalism, you know?
Yeah.
It's just question and answer, but we would sit in his backyard and, he would just tell me stories, or we would drive, you know, we'd go to skate spot and I would just record it. Then I'd transcribe it. I don't have an app or a software to do the zine. Scissors and I ran out of tape, but yeah, I got a bunch of Sharpies and that's it. Like, it's really,
is your layout old school style where you just tape it onto one thing and then go Xerox them all?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know I'll show it one more time. But like,
yeah, I can't really see. Like that's taped on there?
Yeah. So this is the first, this is the front and back, and that's the inside front and back. Yeah. So, and then you just take it and you do copies and then you stack them together, fold it, and then staple it. So it's a process, but it's it's something to do, you know, and for some reason I like to do it.
What are some of your influences when it comes to photojournalism outside of Thrasher? Like, I'm guessing, like, fucking, you read a lot of Bukowski or something. Like, what are some of the influences that Mofo told me that when he first started working, he didn't know shit. They just gave him a camera and they're like, go read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And then just try to write like that.
Oh, and, wow.
And that was it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Wow, it worked.
yeah. I think Mofo's a little modest sometimes. Sometimes he's not modest. But when he was talking about the early days, he portrays himself almost like a total dipshit, which maybe he was. But like, it's undeniable that somewhere he had some earlier things than just reading a book, and like what he's done has been pretty impressive.
Okay. And I think the thing that's in front of the camera makes the photo too. I mean,
right.
One of my favorite, probably if I had to choose, my favorite photo is Jay Alabama with the beer. And that's a Mofo photo.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it just captures spirit energy.
Absolutely.
And that's pretty rad. A rad trick and just gnarly. I liked how Jake wrote, like, really to the point, and like the fire burns, and like I would read like the Angel Dust that he would like so seldomly put out. But I mean, like, I would rip that shit out and put it in my wallet. Like, it like stoked me the fuck out.
Yeah, same. I always encouraged him. I think he claimed Phil killed it. Like, when Phil died, he couldn't do it anymore. Like, I think the last one he did, like, semi-regularly, was Phil's like peace out. He did a few after that, and then obviously he did the zine, but yeah, I love that shit. Like, yeah.
And just reading captions and funny, you know, like, I wasn't a huge fan of Big Brother, but it was there. And then, I mean, Thrasher and Big Brother couldn't be more fucking opposite. But, you know, one is about skateboarding and one is about fucking Big Brother. But I kind of liked Dave Carney's writing and Stesic.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stesic is the guy that everybody modeled after pretty much. Like, he's kind of like, you go listen to Led Zeppelin and then you try to make a band that's kind of not enough that you're just ripping them off, but they're definitely Nazareth influence. Yeah. I think that's what Stesic is for skateboarding journalism. Like, Jake definitely got a lot from him. I think Mo probably did too. I mean, he was kind of the early guy, and all the shit he did with Dogtown and Pal and all that stuff. It's like, he's big.
when I think of Pal, I think of like two different, like maybe three different Pals, but like the photos of the guys that, I think it's Cabot pumping gas, and like it's black and white. Like, that's a Stesic influence, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like some corny stuff. It looks sick, you know?
Uh-huh.
And you can see his influence, and you can see Stacy's influence, and then you see probably George Powell's influence. And they're all, those three are different people. Right. Anyway, so like Stesic shit.
What were your thoughts on Concussion magazine?
I don't like the name that, and I don't really have much thoughts on Concussion. I don't think I ever really read it, but like, better than a hole in the head. I know that was their slogan. And I just remember Timo pointed it out. There's two Mo's now. You said Mo, you're referring to Mofo. I was
Mofo,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess there's Mofo and there's Timo. But anyway, Timo said, he gave a review on Concussion one time in one of the zines.
And Timo did?
Yeah, it was really...
In How Dare You?
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in there that I don't know where it is, but it's in there somewhere, so in one of the issues. But anyway, one of the things I don't like about that magazine was just the name, but I don't know anything about it, really. I forget the guy's name that did it. I haven't thought about it.
Davood.
Damn it. Yeah. Davood.
All right. Well, why is Texas better than Maine?
Why is Texas better than Maine?
What, is this really happening? I only dreamed this stuff at home.
Well, you got Drehobl versus Craig Johnson. Mm. I don't fucking know, dude. You tell me. Texas is sick. Texas is the reason that the president's dead.
Holy crap, I remember that.
That was my setup question for the next one, and maybe it should have followed this one. But,
I see where you're going.
But we're going low card.
Okay.
Do we got beef with low card?
I tried to make like a sort of fake beef, but it was kind of realistic. I tried to swap ads. I like Rob, so I'll say that. Like, I don't like low card, but I like Rob, if that's possible. Thank you. Rob's a sick individual. I mean, in a good way, sick. So, at one time, we were like, let's exchange ads back when low card was like zero, like a zine. And I've always been, you know, so we were like, just exchange ads, like subscribe to low card, subscribe to how dare you, vice versa. And my ad said, it was a picture of a mannequin or something and just said subscribe. And then it said the figment of some lame cunt's imagination, which is a quote from the decline of Western civilization. Mm. And I don't like to put too much thought into stuff. So I don't even know what I'm saying. I don't know what I was like the greater meaning is or whatever. I just threw it together and handed it to him. He's like, we can't use the word cunt in our zine. I was like, you're fucking weak. Can't say fucking the C word. Like, okay. It's a fucking Reader's Digest family magazine. Then that's how you put it. That was about it. And so from there, I just kind of ran with it. Like I kind of made a fake beef. Like, just because, like, you pick, like, it's kind of, I don't know, entertaining. But I don't like low card, though. Like, I've looked at it, and there's, like, ads for, like, basically rollerblades and shit, like the photon light board and the yo-yo wheel and all this stuff. I mean, I'm not even fucking kidding, dude. I mean, you got to get your revenue, right? But I'm like, I don't know, man. I mean, Thrasher doesn't have rollerblade ads, you know, I mean, or milk, right? Wow. And so... Yeah, I think it's and I would look at it and I was part of, I knew most of the people in there. It was like another night of pops or another shitty tattoo session or something. And I knew half the people and I was like, corny. I just figured if you've got a platform and you can say whatever the fuck you want, you should say something cool. And I just I never thought that they said anything cool. I know you were a part of it, so I don't know if you got anything to say. Go ahead.
No, I just, well, I mean, first off, I think like, how did he get the platform? He built this thing, right? It must have been something that like people gravitated towards. It's not like he was just handed it. He made something. No. So like, do you think it changed when it went from different paper, or do you think it's always been the same? I don't know what. And then the follow-up is like, what would you say to him looking through your zine and critiquing your stuff?
So I can critique my own, basically. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, too many.
No, I'm just saying, like, you look at his stuff and you're like, yeah, too much of this. And then he might look at yours and say, well, 5 and 20 years or whatever his. You know what I mean? I don't know. Is there a competitive thing because you guys are in the same city, or is it just like, I don't care? There's no.
I just didn't like the content. And so I like made a stink about it. Or like in my head I did or something, but I think I had
three of the first five covers.
Is that real?
Eric J, McKenny, Drehobl, and I forget who else, but I remember, I think it was like 2, 3, and 7 maybe or something like that.
Oh, then you shot.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, oh, no, okay, nobody right. wants to see me on the cover.
I was like, man, I'm out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but we used to fucking hang tough. I still love Rob, but like it grew into more of a Tadashi and those dudes. And
okay. You know, are they still, I don't know. Are they still in production?
I think so. To be honest, since the pandemic, I work from home now, and Rob used to drop some off at the mag, but I don't really go down there anymore. So
okay.
I'm kind of off it.
Shout out to Rob Collinson.
I know Rob was he was number 6 on the podcast, I think.
Oh, no,
he was in the first 10.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Head on over to your local shop and ask for Blood Wizard. If they're out, then you can tickety-tack on down to bloodwizard.com where you have all of your conjuring needs. Tickety-tack.
Do you ever listen to these?
Yeah, I listened to a few. I had a job building guitar cases, and I had my own little workshop area, and so I would just put this on. I haven't listened to all of them, but I remember Salmons. I remember Mike Siemens. Siemens was touching. I don't mean sarcastically either. It was like Siemens was pretty good. Some stuff he talked about.
Some Texas. Did you listen to Had the Actor from he lives down there too.
Skater
for Roger, and he's in Walking Dead. I forget his name. I'm blowing it.
I don't know. But, Thompson or Taylor or one of those.
I hooked up with him when I was in Austin, like, because before the pandemic, I only did them in person. And then when the pandemic hit, I was like, I can't do them in person. And then Zoom opened up this whole, like, I can do you. We're not even in the same state. Like, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. It sucks that, like, the audio is different and all, and it's a little weird. Like,
it's cool that we can see each other, though, like, rather than it just being a phone call.
Yeah, I think so too. I've gotten totally used to it. In the first few, I was like, FaceTime was never even when P-Stone would FaceTime me, I didn't like it. Like, I've never been a FaceTime guy, but now I think I can deal with it. It's just like, whatever, it is just part of it.
Yeah.
Cool. But would you want to talk a little bit about what's going on? Like, what got you to where you are? Like, did you fucking do something fucking crazy rock bottom style and like end up like saying this is enough, or are you just old and kind of over it, or like
what? A little of both. I think, like, if I hit a rock bottom, it was not the last time I drank. Like, I'm most, I don't know, I like to say stuff for the listening audience or whatever. So, like, I'm a, you know, I got issues, addiction issues and drinking issues and stuff like that. And yeah, I've been trying to get sober for like 10 years, like through programs, but like, I'm not doing the deal. I'm just like half-assing it, half measures, you know what I mean? And so half measures availed me nothing. What happened this last, I was in and out of rehab for like the last 5 years, like for quite a while. Yeah. So like over 10. And last time I was in a rehab was just months ago, 5 months ago. I was out in California and I came back to Austin, and I don't want to like get too many people involved in it or whatever, but
for sure.
I partied. I was sober for 100 days, and then I just decided to go out and have one beer. Like, you would think by now that you know that you can't do that, but I did some more research and I proved once again that I don't know where it'll take me. And I just ended up in a bad space. I'll save the details, you know what I mean? But like, drugs and alcohol were involved, and not like party fun stuff. I mean, you call it parties. I call it party stuff just to be give a general blanket, but like, yeah, back alleys, smoking, and just bad stuff. So it wasn't really conducive to, I've got a daughter and a wife and a stepson, and it's not conducive to that lifestyle. Those two lifestyles don't mix. So I had to go somewhere. So I call up my friend Pete out in Portland. He's got 15 years sober. And he said I could stay with him. I flew out here on a whim, and I stayed one night, two nights, and then he's like, you gotta go, for whatever reason. I wasn't blowing it, it was just for other reasons. So he's like, I was like, well, dude, I don't know Portland really, I haven't been here 20 years, what do you mean I gotta go? He's like, there's this program downtown, which is where I am now, and they'll take you in, and they give you free room, not board, and it's not a rehab, it's just a room. You got your own key. And, you know, you just got to go to groups and UA every once in a while and get on Oregon Health Plan. And so I'm just taking suggestions and just I'm doing the deal, you know. And I hope to continue to just take, well, I don't want to use certain language, but like to reckon with myself, my situation, the internal Zach problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you been, have things been clicking? Like you got the thing that I always hear and through my own process has been, you just have to fucking want it. Like you said, like half-assed, it's not going to happen. Somebody else wants it for you, not going to happen. You seen that I need to get to there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been driven by so much shit. Like, I want to finish this project. I want to do this. I want to go there. Like, whatever it is, like the skateboard mentality, if you can take that to the drinking or the drugs or whatever and say, I'm sick of this. I want to go there. Treat it like a trip. I'm obsessed to get there. I want to do that. That's okay. When I think that maybe, dude, believe me, it ain't easy. I know that. And nobody's a pro, but those are just the words I would give that I hear a lot and that I've used in my own battles and whatnot.
I like the analogy, like, you know, get to where you're going.
Yeah, because you have to, dude, we're who we are. And it's hard to, I mean, the next thing I'm thinking is like, does this whole lifestyle, let's say that you're embracing it and you're doing great, how does that affect like what you've done in the past and what you want to keep doing with, you know what I mean? Like evolving is one thing, but then also like respecting yourself and having your friends respect where you're going to, like a lot of that goes in your head and it can be overwhelming, just those thoughts. And so,
yeah,
I don't know. What do? Do you sit around and read a lot, or like, do you like what kind of things do you do to help kind of like keep your mind off the dark zones or like jump out of an anxiety attack or whatever it may be?
Yeah. I read somewhat. I have literature from various sources.
Like self-help and stuff?
Well, I've got this one right here. I got a little stack of books. Who would have thought? But anyway, The Power of Now. Eckhart Tolle, however you say his name. And then a couple other books. And, you know, I don't like dig into them hard every single day. I go to meetings with other people of my that have the same problem as me, and we try to I don't know, we do the deal. There's a lot to it, you know. I don't want to get too much into it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean,
but I try to help other people too. Like that helps me stay out of my head.
That's, you know, a big one.
Yeah, helping other.
Have you talked to Andy Roy at all?
Not in weeks.
Okay.
It's been not too long, but as far as I know, he's doing great.
Like
when I was in the rehab in back in San Bernardino County in California, he was my neighbor. Like he picked me up at the airport.
Right.
You know, we went skating and stuff. And
that's what you just said is kind of what he's doing. Like focusing that energy on helping other people and just trying to see the rewards and reminding yourself that those rewards are coming to you too. Like, you know, the whole, it's a fucking, it ain't a light switch that you're just like, okay, I'm done.
Thank you.
Like it's, it's a journey. And like, but the cool thing, and not to get too preachy again, but like Jim Greco, Andrew Reynolds, Fred Gall, Andy Roy, these legendary skateboarders, legendary partiers, legendary fuck up, but they've led this example that so far they can change and do a different deed and still, I mean, the boss is still the boss and he's the sober guy and all that stuff. And like, I just think that people need to realize, because it's the same thing as smoking a cigarette. Why'd you do it? Peer pressure. Oh, and then I was addicted. It's like, the cool doesn't always have to be like, I got my beer, I'm drunk, I can barely walk.
Not that cool.
And there's no regrets. Like, fuck, we've all gone through it and it was part of the journey and where we are now. But as you get older, you need your strength and your health to keep the journey going. So that's kind of where I got to when I hit 40. I was like, fuck, dude, I can't. Hangovers were giving me anxiety attacks like all day. And I'd just be like, I can't. This is a waste. Like, whoa.
Yeah. So, big waste of on all levels. I mean, financially.
Yeah.
Emotionally, spiritually, physically. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, just. I mean, if I could do it all over, I don't know. I never liked that question, but like if I was 22, it might be different.
Yeah. No, 40. That's what I mean. Like there's no regrets. Like I think I started drinking when I was probably like 16 or 17, you know? And like when you get to 40, you're like 23 years. That's
yeah.
1/4 of my life. If I'm if I'm lucky.
Right. Yeah. I went 15 to 45, so 30 years.
Yeah, I mean that's a toll on your shit, but well, let's switch gears. Let's end on a fucking good one. Let's go through some of like the best times in your life, like some of your funnest trips, some of the dudes that you think are the raddest that you've like. I'll start with my memory because this is the only time me and you ever went on a trip, I believe, which was Skate Rock. And you and Tony Murano showed up the first day with black eyes.
Oh,
and what that a sweet trip was, that was. Hey, that trip was insane. Like all Skate Rock, but like, holy shit, from day
was
one.
Was that one for the books, dude? Because like, I've been on trips, but you've been on like Gut and you and a few others have been on many Skate Rock trips. So I'm asking you, does that one stand out as Skate Rock trips even?
Well, I talked to Nuge about it because Nuge has been on, I think, almost all of them. And we both kind of agreed. I never went to any of the ones out of the country, but I know that like that South Africa one where they almost died in the truck. Like, so every, but that's what, long story boring, is everyone was gnarly. Everyone had some crazy shit. And I think that was the energy that drew everybody to fucking like, we got to do another one. Like, you know, so, but to answer your question, fuck yeah. Herman's Hole was so crazy. The whole trip, like we got kicked out of the state of Mississippi.
We got kicked out, banned in Mississippi.
That's like,
fact.
That's all you did. I mean, just, out pretty much. Just that alone made that trip like, wow. So I remember
setting
like,
setting each other on fire, black. Everyone had black eyes. It was called Crack Rock. I still got the tattoo. It says Crack Rock 13.
That's right.
I'm not going to pull my leg up, but you know, it's there.
Dude, Tebow, you're going to get cracked.
You're going to get cracked. Threatening everybody.
Yeah.
Yep. So that what happened with that one, this is not a feel good story, but it's kind of funny. So they were just taunting me. I was kind of like the whipping boy in the fucking anti-hero, man. I was just like trying to mind my own business, but they, Timo had found some pills at the airport. And he's like, Zach, you little drug addict, fucking eat these, see what they're like. And I was like, shut the fuck up. You know, leave me alone. I'm like, Instagram and jerking out, just leave me alone. And they're finally like, just, they wouldn't leave me alone. So I like took the bottle. I put a couple in my mouth, gave them the bottle back. And then they're like, ah, and I didn't swallow them. I just held them in my tongue. Cause I knew what I was going to do. I just jumped up and just spit them in Timo's face. So he's spitting a man's face in front of the whole fucking anti-hero team. He's and he just sits back. He doesn't react. He just looks at me. He just sits back. He's like, all right. I was like, yeah, fuck you, dude. You know, and I think it's over. Then we go and we do the whole, was it outside of Chicago where we broke all the lights?
We make it
back to the hotel. This is like night two or something. Just Detroit was one. So we were like early into it. Mm. We were on our way to St. Louis. And so I was so, I was blacked out, let's say that. And I just remember sitting in a room with like, you know, Nuge, Fig, Stone, maybe, I don't know if you were in the same room. Did you see it? But I was just sitting there with Timo and I was like, just after I'd already
spit
in his face, I was giving him shit or something. You know, you did this, that. And then I thought I could box. But dude, I looked at the footage, I could barely stand up. So I'm like this, and like I was like, let's box, you know? And like I went to for a gut shot, and it was just like, eh. You know, it was bad. And then he just goes, bah, 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 bah. And then I like finally, I was like, fuck off. Okay, you got me. We're good. And yeah, he gave me two black eyes. And then I don't know if I got him at all, but he had a black eye, but I think that was from another fight, but we were like the black eye guys.
Yeah.
But that was a great fucking trip. I had fucking PTSD after that shit, to not be fucking honest, but I got a lot of good photos. Yeah.
Oh, I bet, dude. Yeah. Cause Waters was on that trip. Another rest in peace. But, I remember Timo was just following him around the whole time, goes, Waters, you're going to get cracked. Watch your back. You're going to get cracked.
He's yeah. Coming around.
Oh, okay. Man, that was a fun one. So were you there when Nuge and Figgy knocked that dude out and they were like on TMZ in Chicago?
I was in the building, but yes. I think I was setting up a board and they were like,
We arrived after that. We were like at the Siebel skating and we got there and everyone was like, they told us, well, we didn't see it. But
I was in the I was in the area, but no, I didn't see it.
You been to Australia or New Zealand?
Yeah, I've been to both. I lived, I got a ticket to New Zealand and with a stop in Australia, and I ended up staying in Australia for 6 months.
Ooh.
Five and a half. I got there and I skated, I think, some relics. I skated like Five Dock, Ulla Dulla, this and that, Narengay. I don't know. I might be making that one up, but you know, those crazy sounding, parks. And then I went to Bondi. There's a ramp in Bondi, right? But it's not that one. It's this little ramp that was behind a bar and the indie guys were out there. So anyway, long story short, we're having a double Texas barge style ramp on this 4 foot mini ramp. That's like maybe 16 feet wide behind a bar and everybody's drunk. Upson and Trujillo and it's a doubles Texas Razor on a little ass ramp. And me and Matt O'Brien are partners.
We're living in a catfish age, homeboy.
It's just not supposed to get, it's just all bad. So I was skating, long story short, right? I go up front side and I step off my board and Wade Burkett, this big dude, he falls on top of me because everybody's on the ramp and it just crushes my ankle the wrong way. Like it didn't even fold the hard way. And Max was there and he's like, Zach, I think it's not good because everybody heard it. It was loud, like taking a tree branch and putting it in a towel. And just, so I ended up going to the hospital and getting it all fixed. But my point is I wasn't going to leave until I skated everything. So I was like, they're like, you can't walk for 6 months. I was like, no, I'm just going to. So I quit drinking for like, you know, 4 weeks and just ate protein and blah, blah, blah. I healed up. And ended up, you know, and then Mo came out, Timo. So me and Timo and my friend Dean Finch, who's an Australian, we just traveled the East Coast all the way up down Gold Coast to Adelaide Adeline. And Adelaide. And we just hit like over 100 parks. And then we went to New Zealand because that's where my ticket was taking me.
Oh.
And skated as much stuff as we could, sleeping under bridges, making a little campfire under bridges, like hobo style, but skater hobo style, and just living in the car and causing a ruckus and just
was that one of the better ones?
That was probably one of the most epic adventures of my life. Yeah, we skated so much, and like I could handle it. I can handle broken bones for fuck's sake, and so a hangover wasn't shit. You know, it hurt, but you get over it in 10, 20 hours as opposed to 5 days. But anyway, yeah.
Did you hang out with Lee at all? Lee Ralph?
No, we were in New Zealand. We looked for him, but we had no connection. So it was just more like drunken blabber, like, we're going to find Lee Ralph. But we never did.
Yeah. Where's the best place you've ever been? Is down there one? Is that one of the best places?
To skate? When I was there, we were skating like relics.
Or not even to skate, just like that you like if you could go anywhere, like that place was sick, or the experience, or just the skating was that epic, like whatever.
I really like Barcelona. The beach, it's a city with a beach, you know, it's not that far away from the downtown. From what I remember, I was only there for a matter of days, but that place was fucking epic. I was there with my friend Jagger. I don't know if you know Jagger, but yeah, I was there. Dan Ball, I was there with him. I was staying in London for a while, and then we paid like $50 to fly to Spain and back.
Oh,
and Mac Baw and the streets, the people, the food, everything was sick there.
What do you think your claim to fame is on the skateboard rolling? I kickflipped a seven. I fucking like did a Miller flip in front of Andy Mack. Like, what do you got?
I never Miller flipped in front of Andy Mack, but there's this ledge in Itelson Hubba. That was like really fucking.
Ollie and the Gons is fucking sick.
I Ollie the Gons when I was 17. Itelson Hubba when I was 18. And then there's this ledge in Philly. It was like 16 stair, but like the stairs are like 2 feet long. I frontboarded it. Chris Cole's Ender in 0-0 video, but he did it after me. But I put my hand on the ledge. So you decide. But that was probably the biggest thing that I did. I really didn't consider it a make because I put my hand down for a second, but that's probably the biggest jammer that I've always ever jammed on.
All right. This might be tough, but people are able to answer it. What is one of, it doesn't have to be the, what is one of the best things you've ever been there live for?
Oh, I got you.
Okay.
Kareem Campbell's back 780 at the end of his run at Shut Up and Skate. 93. God, it might have been 92, but I want to say 93. Kareem Campbell, like he was Shut Up and Skate at the skate park in Houston. And the vert ramp is there, but this is street time. So it was like Dune, Kareem, Ethan, Jason Lee, Colin McKay, Anthony Oglesby, whatever. They were all there. And Kareem just happened. And I was on mescal. So everything was like just heightened. You know, I was just like, everything's so, whoa. You know, I don't know if you've ever done mescaline, but like it's not quite acid. But anyway, it's something else. And then so Kareem does this fucking flawless run with just, you know, he flips his board, but he has power, and it's just like, and then finally he just like drops in at one end, push, it's in videos, and like push, pumps over the pyramid, and then just goes up. It's just a bank, but he uses it as a launch ramp. Ollie backs out an 80 over the rail flat, and you can't even see him, you know, he's like, he just disappears.
Oh, shit.
I just tripped. I mean, I was literally tripping, and I was just like, dude, what if aliens came down and, you know, you're just going to carry on with your day? Like, how did that just happen? That, you know, I thought it was like, I was comparing it to like aliens coming to Earth or something. I don't know how it's fucked up, but
yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the most intense, craziest, gnarliest things. That and Timo bombing 17th Street, and he did not make it, but he did not die either. Yeah.
Was he hammered?
No, we were not. In our
young Timo?
Yeah, I was 18, so he was 18, 19 or something. We were with Matt McGrath. We were at the top skating. There's a wall ride at the top of 17th, you know?
Yeah.
And then we're just like going to go towards back into the city, like back towards Market. And every rational, normal skateboarder, I guess, if that's even a thing, is doing power slides. And Mo has never even seen this hill, let alone tried to skate down it. And everybody's doing power slides, you know. And Mo just goes and goes and goes. And we're just watching because obviously, you know, he's in front of us. And he's just like a couple blocks in, and we're like, holy shit. And he just starts to get the wobbles, and he just goes down, and it was like slides. Like he's on a slip and slide for fucking over a block. And I'm just like, don't go in oncoming traffic. Please don't hit a stopped car. And I'm still skating. You know, I'm probably dragging my foot at this time to just like get a fucking sense of what the fuck is going on. But, you know, because I'm still riding up to him. And then I get down there and his pants are just like destroyed. And he's just, you know, rash everywhere. And he survived. And then we picked berries off the a wild tree and or a wild plant. That was that. It. But he's a gnarly skateboarder.
Yeah, another all terrain, everything can skate everything. Yeah. You said Danny Way, I'm guessing, as one of your all time. Like, if you made Rushmore, what would you go with? Who would you put up there?
Is Rushmore four?
Five.
Oh, five?
Well, let's just say five. I think it might be four, but I think we're going to go five.
Okay, I got it. Gons, one.
Uh-huh.
Cardiel, Julian. Way one more, huh? Okay. Carol.
Mike Carroll.
MC.
Shout out.
All right. If there was six, Timo, you're up there.
Yes. Timo six with Danny Way and Cardiel.
It'd be so sick. Okay. Some kid just got sponsored by Anti-Hero. green as fuck from Midwest. Let's say he's from Kansas City, you know, mm-hmm. he comes to California and they're getting him in ready to go in the van. He's going on a fucking anti-hero trip around the country. He comes to you and he's like, Zach, give me some tips. What do I need to know before I go get in here and go with these guys?
Don't be cocky. Don't think that your shit doesn't stink, because it stinks like everybody else's in the fucking van. And skate your ass off.
And don't look at people when you land your trick, ever.
Oh God, no high beaming. That I mean, there's like, a lot I could say, but you know.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Fuck, anything else we should fucking touch base on? What do you think about Wheatberry's Angel Dust?
Well, have you seen it? Yeah. He sent me a hoodie, a hat. Yeah. He hooks me up because I've been sending him photos for the zine. Oh, right. I think it's a little weird that he put the Thrasher cover on his cover, the T-Funk. But, you know, if Wheatberry hears this, he's all, fuck that dude. I'm like, all right, whatever, Wheat. But I'm stoked that he's doing something.
To be honest,
writing is really good. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm impressed, to be honest. Like, I was talking to Noah about it, and I was like, I just can't believe that this is, that nobody else is involved helping or put it like it comes he does it all, right?
Yeah, I don't know. He's hard to guide to get a hold of, but I know that he's the man behind it, you know, but I don't know how it works, but I don't know. Yeah, good on your Wheat. Keep
it on your Wheat. I think we were going to do a trade at some point, but then the pandemic hit us, but he was like, I want to do an interview with you. And I thought it was a setup. I still think it might be a setup. And I was like, okay, but I want to do one with you on the podcast.
Dude, and I was like, yeah, what's your, okay. Yeah.
When I asked Wheatberry the first time, he's like, fuck no, I'm not giving my story away for free.
Fuck that shit, dude.
I love it, dude. Yeah, because Wheat's the best. I remember the craziest Wheat story. I mean, it's not the craziest. I should never say the is.
Yeah.
But a crazy story I have about Wheatberry is Jake and I were going up to what we called the Cardiel Rail before Jack Fardale came and did it. But it's up in the Potrero Heights. The one Cardiel board slide, eyes looking crazy. Right. So Jake and I were going up there to look at it because he wanted to fucking get someone to do it. This was a while back. And we're walking up and he's like, we'll probably run into Wheat. He lives like in the bushes over here or some shit like that. And like, seriously, Wheat just pops out and he's like, I knew it. Yeah. And it was Bob Burnquist's birthday. And Wheat knew that it was Bob. He's like, hey, dude, how do we get a hold of Bob? It's Bob's birthday today. And I was just like, this guy. He's smart, man. He's on.
No, he's a smart fella, man. Look at the size of his noggin, dude. I mean, there's a brain. You got to get that dude on here. I mean, we're going to tune into that one.
Yeah. And then Sean's trying to help me get Noah. There's a bunch of guys.
Noah would be a good one. Timo. Yeah.
What would your 5-year plan be? Like in 5 years, I'm going to be pro, bro. And if I'm not pro, I'm going to have a kid. And if I don't have a kid, I'm going to be President of the USA.
Well, you know how Mike Carroll's like pretty good skating, right? He's only 6 months older than me. So I figure in 6 months from now, I'll be as good as he is now. So in 5 years, the better he gets, that's how much better I'll get. So that's my plan.
You're shadowing Mike.
I can't do anything about the 6 months, but I'm 6 months behind him. So wherever Mike Carroll's at in 5 years, I'll be 6 months behind him. I don't know. Go back to school, get a job. I'm like washing dishes and flipping burgers right now. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. I work at a bar restaurant in the back as a cook.
How's that for you? It's
fine.
I
have no temptation. I just work and go home.
Okay,
but
my father's place.
I used to work there actually, washing dishes like 20 years ago. But no, this place is down the street. Called Silver Dollar, but you know, you'd be surprised what they pay. It's actually pretty good. But no, nice. I do actually want to go back to college because I got like 2 years worth of credit. So I can get a BA in like 2 years or BS or whatever and do something in communication and media.
Okay.
Yeah. Or be nice, a pastor. Dude.
Well, sending you fucking good vibes and shit and hopefully yeah. fucking what you said, you just got a little bit of time to get through this stage. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Didn't you say you had like 5 weeks left or in your,
Oh, at this place where I'm at. Yeah. I'm leaving in 2 weeks. I'm going back to New York
State. Oh, in 2 weeks. You're going to go live in New York,
New York State, Utica,
like up north.
Yeah. Yeah. Central New York. Upstate Syracuse, Utica area.
Okay.
Yeah, my daughter's out there, so that's why.
Oh, sick.
And okay. there's a school I can get into, a university, four-year school. So
anywhere near Jamestown?
For. I don't know. I don't know New York that well.
Look up Jamestown. They happen to be the skate shop of the year for us last year.
Oh, shit.
And the bod is out there, or he was recently out there building the skate park. Big cement.
Oh, I'll look up.
Yeah,
look
Grindline Park out in Jamestown. Those dudes are rad. They have an indoor bowl too, wooden, and they're all fucking cool. Yeah, hit them up if it's nearby. I don't know where you're going, but
yeah, it can't be too far.
Okay. Well, what we always do the fake jukebox and fucking pretend that we're gonna put on a song and ride out into the sunset.
It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
All right, AC/DC. This one's for Arco.
Fuck yeah.
Whatever I think of AC/DC, I think of fucking Jake and Arco. Those are heavy influences with the AC/DC. Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Good to see you. And seriously, hope everything goes well. And fucking, you got my contact. Reach out anytime.
All right.
Let me know how it's going. Yeah, dude.
Right on, Schmitty.
We'll talk soon. Take care. Say hi to Joe Brooke and Bryce Knights if you see them up there, or Mickey or any of them.
Yeah, will do.